5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
It feels good to be back. Hello, my friends. This is Jason Barrett. You found Season 3, Episode 5 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Good to have you here. Coming up on today's show, I catch up with Colin Dunlop of 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. We had a chance to spend some time together in studio during the summer where we talked about his approach to the craft, his sports radio journey, and we also got into some personal stuff that I think you guys really want to check out. I couldn't even imagine as a parent if my child was going through a fight against cancer, but that's exactly what Colin's situation is right now. Some of you guys may have seen the piece that ESPN did on his family. It was tremendous. But he talks a lot about that, and you know, it puts a lot of things in perspective because as competitive as we are in what we do, at the end of the day, we're still just people trying to do something that we love and go home to families that we care about. So I really want you to check that out. I think he had some great insights to share. You know, as far as why the podcast went away for the summer, I want to be transparent because if you work in this business, chances are you've gone through this at some point. You can do a great show and everyone tells you that it's great and you see the numbers and they look great, but you yourself feel like you're starting to get stale. And that was kind of the way I was feeling as I went through this process and have now done 36 episodes. This is number 37. And I started thinking, every week I'm going into this, here comes the intro, there's the five stories, now we do the interview, recap the interview, sign off, see you next week. And I just felt like this thing needs a fresh coat of paint. Just like a house, the foundation can be great, the inside can look great, but every now and then you change up the outside appearance because you just want to feel like it's a brand new place that you're living in. I give enough opinion, writing content, interacting on social media, and if I wanted to, I could create a second podcast to give opinions. It doesn't need to get in the way of what people are coming here for. Another part of the strategy that I want to talk about was I realized my schedule is really difficult for being consistent on a week-to-week basis. I can tell myself that I'm going to execute it, and something always seems to come up that gets in the way of being able to be consistent, and I hate that. It drives me crazy. And so I thought, why not release 4 episodes at a time? That allows me to do this on a monthly basis. It gives you guys a ton of content to digest. And so that's what we're going to do from this point forward. If you're on the website, sportsradiopd.com, you're going to see this episode, number 5, with Colin Dunlop. You'll also see episodes 6, 7, and 8, which include conversations with Anthony Stalter of 101 ESPN in St. Louis, John Lund of KNBR in San Francisco, and Lance Zierlein of ESPN 97.5 in Houston. But enough about that. As I mentioned, I had a chance to sit down with Colin Dunlop of 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. So without further ado, here's our conversation. 3, 2, 1. Let's start with this. How'd you even get sucked into the local business?
It's crazy. My wife and I had twins, and that was about the time that, like, and I was working in newspapers. I'd worked at the Post-Gazette for a while and was covering the Pirates at that time. And my twins were born premature, and so it was like a lot of traveling, and my wife was off, and she just had some maternity leave. And I had worked a little bit at the old ESPN 1250 for Jim Gracie. And then over here, I had heard rumblings that 93.7 The Fan was going to come into existence. But it was just too much work at the newspaper. So I decided that one day, it was about a month into the season, 2 months into the season, I said, I can't do it anymore. The newspaper business is too demanding. It's too much. My wife has a pretty good job. And I said, let's just try this for a year. I'm just going to be out. I'm just not going to work. I'm going to stay at home with the kids. So I got out of the newspaper business. And then just a couple months later, the station came into existence. Terry Fox was the PD at the time. And it was interesting that the old boss at the newspaper, even though when I was leaving, said, hey, there's a radio station coming into town. Why don't you give them a ring if you want to start with some weekend and some part-time work? So I did that, and it worked perfect because I just worked a shift or two on the weekends, and then it kind of grew into working full-time on the weeknights when I wanted to go back because my wife and I could flip schedules, and then it worked 6 to 10, and then all of a sudden we're here.
So when you were working in print, were you one of those guys that listened to local sports radio?
No, I definitely did. I consumed it. I'm not a radio nerd. I'm not schooled in radio. I don't know anything about the technical aspects of it, but I did listen, and this station wasn't in existence right. For the most part when I worked in print.
So who'd you listen to?
Madden, for the most part.
Okay.
Just because he captivated me, brought me in. Way back, I listened to Myron Cope. Everyone did growing up. Just because that's who you listen to. And I listened to Stan Saverin, and mm-hmm. I listened to Guy Junker. Because those guys, they did it. They were us. They were Pittsburgh. Just as Mark was, and still is, with mm-hmm. a different edge. And so I listened to the old 1250, whether it was WTAE, and then went into ESPN. So those were the guys. I mean, I was really little when you listened to, not little, but Myron Cope was a long time ago.
Right.
Stan Saverin and Guy Junker for sure, and then Mark.
So that was back when ESPN 1250 was essentially the lead brand here. And then obviously the fan comes on the scene and the radio's changed here. I mean, it's the performance in the market has jumped significantly since FM was launched. Take me through, since you were here when the station launched and you were doing some part-time stuff, now you're doing full-time in mornings. What's the difference between the fan day one and the fan where it is today?
Brand and personality identity, I think. We're not trying to cut a path anymore. We've established it. We're not trying to impress. We're not trying to say, come, come, come. You got to listen to us. This is what we have. People know what we're going to give you. What I give you is I'm a regular guy from Pittsburgh that I try to envision who's on the other side of that microphone, and it's me. I'm just that guy. I'm that guy that's listening that has the radio on that's painting a house in Aspenwall. I'm that guy that's listening that's waiting at a doctor's office somewhere in Dormont. I'm the guy that's listening that's walking to his class that I was that guy at 20 years old,
mm-hmm.
the kid that's walking to his class at Duquesne. I'm that. Ron is who he is. He's a columnist. He's going to look at things sometimes glass half empty. That's who Ron is.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew's the guy that's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. That's who he is. Mahler, regular Pittsburgh guy. Joe is a guy that looks at things sometimes philosophically a little bit different. Paul Zeiss is going to chop your head off with words, if that's what. But he's a regular Pittsburgh dude. So I don't think we're trying to, from day one till now, we're not trying to establish an identity anymore. We're trying to be more comfortable in who we are, and people know who we are, and we're just trying to build that more.
You obviously start out part-time. You talked about how the brand has evolved. One of the things that's definitely changed is you're now a full-time guy. You're now one of the guys on the radio station. At what point did you start thinking about doing this full-time and feel like it was something you'd really want to get into?
Probably when I started working 6 to 10 at night, because I worked 10 to 2 for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. It was really great because it was after a lot of Pirate games and things
right.
were hot, and they were hot, you know, and I had covered that team, so I knew a lot of those guys. And I realized that first hour especially, there's still that drive time spillover.
Yeah.
Like I'm catching people, they either left late for work or they just worked that late or they're still stuck in traffic or they went home and grabbed something real quick and they're headed to their kid's basketball game or their kid's soccer game or football game. Hey, look, when it's 1 a.m, you know you're talking to yourself. When it's 6:12 and you're giving that open monologue still to start your show, you can feel it being bigger. When
yep.
you look at that call screen and you see all those lines lit up, you know. So that's when I first, that real thirst came in and said, I think this is like really for me.
So you're loving what you're doing here. And all of a sudden, Greg Giannotti had been hosting mornings here. He was incredible talent. He's on now in New York with Boomer. He leaves. The morning show opens. They want to put you into mornings. Take me through what, you know, your mindset and the way you were feeling at that time, because here you are, you're talking about the brand growing in identity. It's now got a good morning show, and going into mornings from nights is a totally different animal. So, and you're also trying to replace a guy who obviously in the company's grand scheme is good enough to go to New York. They think he's pretty good. And so there's got to be some internal pressure. Every host has it.
Oh, yeah.
Of where
I
you
was
feel like
death. Man.
Right. Can I do this? Can I be as successful?
Well, like, and then there was also when he found out Greg was going to that CBS National Network, you know, there started to be talks about like who was going to replace him. So I said to Greg, I said, like, I might try to go for your job. And he obviously knew something, right? And he said, and this was, I don't know, maybe October, November when that all came to being. And it was going to launch like January 6th.
Right.
Just went, and he goes, listen, don't do anything dumb between now and the end of the year. And I'm thinking, wow, he probably knows something that at least I've got a chance, right?
Right.
And so I remember that conversation I had with him. And I'm like, okay, don't say anything dumb. But then I start to question myself. Well, can I do this? Do I need to evolve? And I'll tell you what, Jason, the one thing I knew I needed to get softer. I knew I need not change myself, not change my opinions, but somebody waking up and listening to you at 7:12 in the morning,
right,
is someone different than 7:12 in the evening.
Correct.
You can't just hammer them with this guy stinks, this guy sucks, this guy's a tomato can. And I knew I had to be gentler and change in that way.
People want to hear a conversation in the morning. Yes. You're setting the tone for what they're going to go through for the next 9 hours. They're going to work 8 to 5, 9 to 5.
Well,
and they're looking to you to provide entertainment and information and some, you know, some good thought-provoking content, but they're not ready for that kill the manager, I want heads to roll today.
And at the time, it was Ryan McGuire who was the PD, who's an insanely brilliant guy who's in Seattle now. And he brought me in and we were talking and along with the other bosses, and they offered me the job, and I'm like, yeah. And I was still scared to death. But I think about now what our current PD, Jim Gracie, tells me all the time and tells everyone, is in the morning, you want to deliver people sports currency and topical currency that they take to their office. Mm-hmm. They're standing around the water cooler, standing around the coffee machine or whatever, and they say, and they may not even cite you. They may just say, hey, you know what I heard? I heard this guy's hitting this month. Or, hey, do you think that maybe the Pirates made those moves because the fan base kind of pushed them into it? And they own it as theirs,
right,
in their conversation starters. Whereas you're kind of starting the day off. You're lighting the wick, and at night you were reactionary, mm-hmm, to kind of more what had happened through the course of the day. This, you're getting the ball rolling. Now you're reacting to some of the stuff from the night before, of course. But that's the evolution, and that was the fear that I had if I could do that. Could I be the conversation starter more,
right,
than the reactor?
So when did you feel like, this is my morning show? This does have my prints on it, and it feels right, versus what you just talked about, getting into it, going, hey, I just hope I don't screw the thing up.
I'm just kind of starting to feel that way. I go through that every day. You know, before the microphone goes on, I question myself all the time, and it's not like philosophical, like if you're not trying to get better, you're not,
right,
you know, you're a baseball player, so if you're not learning every day,
yeah,
it's starting to feel like that now because I can feel it getting bigger. I feel people talk to me outside of the studio, outside of the station, or I heard that the other day, or the emails that you get, because I've just become, the delivery's become more natural, and it's just become kind of me. And I figured out, not a template, but a way to start the conversations and get them going. And now you own it. Like, I obviously infuse opinion,
mm-hmm,
but it's not this heavy-handed black and white opinion as it was at night anymore. The more I've allowed room for some gray area and some nuanced opinion and maybe admitting when you're wrong sometimes too,
right. Right.
That plays a lot more in the morning, I think, and it plays a lot more to respectability.
So you currently work with Jim Colony. You had Josh Miller with you. He's no longer on the show. How has that changed in the last couple months, your approach of doing a show? Because when you're working three guys versus two, that's obviously a different. You don't have that extra guy that you have to get involved. But also, sometimes that guy could be hot, and if you didn't have a good prep day, you don't have four red-hot opinions, you feel like I can go to him. Now there's a little more pressure.
I think it's allowed both Jim and I, and particularly me, because Jim is like a lot of times running around doing updates. He does updates for the AM and stuff. It's allowed me to to stretch my legs a little bit on not necessarily just opinion, but thought in the backup of where the research that you'd done, supplementing the opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's allowed that. Because we're a show which the clock structure, we do a lot of quick segments. We, you know, we'll do a 10-minute segment, or we'll do at the top of the hour like an 11-and-a-half-minute segment. But we don't have these drawn-out 17-minute segments. So it's allowed me to dive into it a little bit more instead of this go-around-the-room carousel sort of template that we had before. Mm-hmm. Eye open, what's your opinion, what's my opinion, let's touch on yours. All right, let's bookend it, and then bang, we get to a spot. It's allowed a little bit of stretch and a little bit of reach to that opinion, and a little bit more to pad it out with why I feel that way.
So when you were working with a former athlete, what were the pros, what were the cons? And the reason I ask that, I've worked with a number of them, and they all have different things that make them incredibly great on the air, and they also have some things that can drive you crazy.
Former athletes are tricky because the longer they're out of the game, the less effective they are because they don't know that many people that are playing.
Right.
And so what's the value in that? If you don't currently know people in the locker room, are you more valuable than, if from that aspect, are you more valuable than a reporter? And I would say no.
Right.
Like, once you get about 5 years removed, you don't know any dudes in there anymore anyway.
You know, it's funny about that. That's a great point because when you're within 5 years of being removed, you have a harder time being opinionated and critical of guys you're friends with.
Yeah.
But you have the access. When you get 5 years removed, you don't have the access, but you become more opinionated.
Correct.
It's like, but wait, I need both. I need the access and the opinion.
So that's the negative is everybody assumes, well, yeah, this guy, that's the negative. Like, once you're out of it for so long, you really don't know more about the current team than reporters do. But the big positive is the nostalgia.
Right.
If something happens, and case in point, when Josh was working with us, Chuck Knoll died. You were able to make phone calls, get this old player, get that old player, right, get this person. Or, and Bill Cowher knows Jim, covered him.
Right.
I grew up in the same school district where Bill Cowher's kids went. I know Bill some. So we can get him, and we do get him because he knows both me and Jim. But he didn't yell in our face.
Right.
He yelled in Josh's face.
Right.
You know, Josh played for him. So that was something where I'm sure if it was a 50-50 call and he said, well, I don't know if I could do that spot in Pittsburgh. Oh, that's Josh's show. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. He played for me.
Right.
Good dude.
Right.
That's the part, too, where I think sometimes it helps with tiebreakers, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so that's the positive and the negative.
I want to go into some of the local teams and how you guys talk about that, some of your PDs and some of that stuff in a little bit. But there's one story I got to ask you about because, and I can't believe I missed this. I was on a plane about 2 months ago. I'm flying JetBlue to Denver, and the story comes on SportsCenter. And I'm like, Colin Dunlop, radio host. Wait, what is this, SportsCenter? And I find out, oh, my God, your daughter was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And I saw what, I mean, that the piece they did on you was tremendous. And I just, as I was watching the story, I mean, first of all, you know, I don't care who you are in this business. You root for every guy in this business. So there was the side of me that was like, man, I feel for this guy. I hope this gets better for his family. But the other side of that, that starts going through my head, how are you able to focus on doing a show every day, talking for 20 hours a week, when you've got that in your world? That is way more important than any of this stuff we're talking about. How do you go about your day finding the joy in watching sports when real life is sitting there and it's part of your focus every single moment?
Well, because I have a great wife, and I have a great, because my daughter is real tough, and so is my son, her twin brother. What are you going to do? Are you going to stop?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to, like, sit at home and whine and moan? And if you don't find yourself in a routine and a regularity, then an affliction can envelop you. Then it becomes your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So if I show my daughter, my wife shows our daughter, and believe me, she gets all the care she's supposed to. A lot of times I run right out of here, and I'm in an oncology unit at 11 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm, or noon. But if we show her that life, and she's 7, she was diagnosed when she was 5, and she has leukemia. If we show her that everything is different, and school she can't go, or this she can't go to this or that or whatever, aren't her antennas going up like, as much as they, more than they already do, wow, this is irregular, this is crazy, something's wrong in my world? We've been a real big proponent of, let's try to keep everything as normal as possible so as not to uproot it even more.
Right.
Because she can't process what she's going through. And heck, kids don't have a big picture, and that's the best part of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, she just thinks the biggest thing in her world is she can't go to some birthday party. Not that she has cancer.
Right.
You know, because she doesn't think of mortality, or she doesn't think of something big, or what's going to happen. So the best plan of our attack has been try to keep life normal so it doesn't raise more red flags. So what are you doing, Dad? I'm going to work. Okay, I'll see you later. And that's how we've kind of kept it in. And it's not an escape. People say it's an escape. No, it's work. It's my job.
Right.
It's what I do. But that's how, what we've chosen to do, because I just feel it's you can get derailed and let those idle times just think of all the bad that can happen. Whereas here, it's forced to focus and made us stay regular as possible.
How has radio helped you during that process? Because, I mean, people hear the story. Your audience obviously are going to connect to you through it. They obviously want to contribute to try to help raise money.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of pros that can come from that story being out there. How has it helped you?
I think it's helped in a couple ways. All those that you touched on. It's forced people to understand that there's a human face to giving to this, that anybody's child could be afflicted with cancer, a guy that they don't know, a guy they hear on the radio. It also, I think, has forced the audience into, this is kind of a how they make the sausage radio kind of thing. It's forced the audience into understanding that everybody to every degree, no matter how much they act like theirself, has some sort of shtick. That no matter what I say about this player or that player or this guy, and no matter what kind of hard knifed edge I could have in the morning, at 10:01 I put my earphones down and I'm a dad. And I think it's been therapeutic to me, but I think it's been good for some of the people, the more perceptive people in the audience, but most people, that says, hey, I might hate that guy and what he said about the Steelers. What he said about the Penguins the other day, that I was ready to choke that guy at 8:15 in the morning, but that's just his sports opinion.
Right.
And he's just a regular guy that has that sports opinion because, man, he's a dad and his kid's going through, and he would do this. I'd do the same thing he does.
Right.
You know, and I think it's forced the audience to understand that this is just what we do. It's not who we are. Whereas I think it becomes unhealthy if it becomes your total existence, whatever job you're in. And so that to me has been one of the big benefits. I'm seen not just as a radio host. I'm seen as a dad and a person and a human. Like, I see TV guys that I know, Whole Foods or whatever, people look, they're just a guy going to pick up some milk.
That's it.
You know?
He just happened to have a microphone and a suit. That's
right.
I want to ask you about, because when they did the piece on ESPN, they showed how awesome the teams here were in supporting you and your family. And you're paid for opinions to talk about these teams. So let's just use an example. Ben Roethlisberger is tremendous with your daughter. Ben Roethlisberger comes out, he's 0-3, he's playing like crap. And you know how great Ben Roethlisberger can be, but at the same time, the sports fan in you is pissed off because the Steelers aren't playing good. And you're ready to unload, and I want this guy not playing. But then there's that side that creeps into your head like, but it's Ben.
Oh, no, he'll get hammered.
How do you stay true to your sports opinions, sharing what you naturally feel as a fan, and at the same time remembering, like, some of these people have been incredible. I mean, what they've done for me is impossible to ignore.
I've separated because they've separated it. Because the good part about it is because they knew all about me and what I was about before she got sick.
Right.
And it's a testament to all those guys that some of those guys I'd hammer about throwing 5 interceptions or about they should trade this guy. And they reached out because they understand it more than anything, that this is just what we do, not who we are. It hasn't stopped me from being critical of anybody. It won't stop me from being critical of anybody. It's just the job that I do. And I think that, no, it'll never stop me from that. But it has been, I have seen the really good in a lot of people, particularly like mega star, like Antonio Brown's like as big a star, I think, as maybe there is in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
And recognize and the stuff he's done. Andrew McCutchen is a big-time guy, what he's done. The stuff that he'll never take credit for, Sidney Crosby has done, that he's wanted to kind of keep secret. has really blown me away. Even more so the donations and things that they've made. Not to us, because we don't need any money, but to the hospital and things like that has been, it's really helped and that kind of stuff. But it doesn't stop me from Monday morning if Ben throws five interceptions. He played like a dog.
And you have to, yeah, because that's what your fan base is feeling. Let's talk about some of those teams, because obviously I'm guessing the Steelers dominate conversation. They should. You know, every market's got that one team that just, you know, you can rely on for conversation. It's always going to work. Steelers, I'm guessing, are that team for you guys. What do you do with a Pirates team where you got an incredible park? This team has been better in recent years than they had been for a long time. On the other hand, some of the names are not marketable. They're not right now in the playoffs. So what do you do to keep people wanting to hear about this team? Because you guys also air their games.
Yeah, it's not tough. You just read the room. You don't sell something that's not there, and you have to be truthful. You know, we're the flagship, and luckily not one time has my PD ever come in and said, don't talk about this, don't say that, I can't believe you just did that. There have been times maybe he's not been happy with some of the things, but he's never said don't, right, or stay away from, or you can't say this. Now, I've not been stupid about it either. What I think you have to do is stay away from beating the same drum. Like, there's a lot of people in Pittsburgh would agree that they don't think the owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Bob Nutting, spends enough money.
Mm-hmm.
That they think it should go back into player development. They think he should try to accrue free agents and the payroll should be higher. You can really only say that, though, so many times before you tread on the same territory.
Right.
So you have to find different avenues, and you have to not paint a rosy picture for the sake of just painting a rosy picture. So I think what you have to do is you just have to find different trails to go down. And they don't have to. You don't have to find a positive trail to go down. You just have to point everything out. But at this time of year, the Steelers do start to kind of take over. And what I found is it doesn't have to be equal time. Too many people, I think, in the way that our show is set up around the country and that I've listened, they make one topic indigenous to the whole segment. I have found diving in and out throughout the course, even within a segment, is really helpful,
mm-hmm,
to be able to shift gears quickly and to juggle multiple topics simultaneously,
mm-hmm,
is what works to kind of test out what's hot. Let our listener and let the room tell you what you should be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's obvious. You know, they make a big trade, you're talking about that,
right,
the next day.
Right.
But in times like this, like you just said, how do you sprinkle? Well, you sprinkle in the Pirates, see if you get any bites. Sometimes things might take off. Don't force it, but if it's there, go with it a little bit.
What about hockey? Because this is a great hockey,
yeah,
market. But most of the time, any markets I've seen,
This isn't a hockey market. It's a Penguins market.
There you go. That's a great way of putting
Nobody
it.
Wants to watch L.A. and Vancouver.
Right.
They want to watch
exactly.
the Penguins play.
But your fan base here love the Pens. They will listen to you talk about the Pens.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of teams that exist in local markets. Like, I was in St. Louis for 5 years. We have the Blues. I can show you anytime we talk the Blues, the radio gets turned off, ratings go down. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, this is our local team. Yes, it is a local story, but guys, no one seems to care about hearing it. How do you guys make hockey on the radio interesting to where the Pens fan is engaged in listening to radio? Because if you were to do a segment, talk about the Steelers, you know it's going to do well. If you're doing a segment on the Pens, talk about hockey, obviously it ain't going to be Steelers.
Because storylines are what sells with the hockey, I've found.
Okay.
Nobody, no matter what, nobody hears from Moose Jaw or is from wherever. They don't know X's and O's, even if they think they do.
Right.
Very few people. That is a deep and narrow segment of the audience,
right,
that knows a lot about X's and O's. When you talk Penguins, you talk storylines. Everybody in Pittsburgh thinks they're the offensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a lot of people have a general idea how to run this play or run that play because football is in our blood.
Right.
Nobody knows. Nobody
Well,
knows.
Video games too, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, you can play Madden and you see all the plays.
Yeah.
You don't get that in hockey.
Everybody played Little League Baseball.
Right.
You know about what a pitcher should be over there covering when the ball's to the right side. You know about the cutoff play. You don't know the technical stuff about hockey.
Right.
So to keep it to storylines is, I think, where you win in hockey and where you can have a conversation. And plus, we've had the best – think about this. We've had the best player in the world since Mario came here.
Right. I was going to say personality plays into it, too.
Yeah. And so we've had Mario and then Sid. We've had a run, and we've had Yager that's been very good. We have Evgeny Malkin. So it's good to have personalities. So the way to keep it for me, and we had Flurry and Murray for a couple years.
Right.
It was a great goaltender situation that just, you can always talk about goaltender battles.
Yep.
You keep it to storylines and you don't get technical. And that to me has really captivated our audience. And plus, people always want to talk about a winner and they win.
Yep.
So I think that's where it is.
Let's go. That's a good transition. Speaking of winning, because you guys have done a lot of it since this station launched. You've had three different PDs during that time. You had Terry Fox, then Ryan McGuire, Jim Gracie. Take me through what was different between those three guys.
I didn't really know Terry all that well because I worked at night when I worked for him, late at night, and mainly part-time, actually. And so I really didn't see him all that much.
Okay.
He wasn't here all that long, so I didn't know him all that well. I knew Ryan a lot better. He kind of was the one that brought me along full go, full time. He was brilliant in that he always listened. He would ask you, why did you do this? Then he would listen, and then he might get into you and tell you never to do it again. But he always listened, and he gave you praise when he thought you did something well. And that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to always just talk to the boss. It's like talking to somebody only when they need something. You know, you got those friends that they only call you when they need
something.
Listen,
I'm in the consulting business for 3 years. Believe me, I get a lot of those calls.
And so he was a guy who, you didn't only talk to him when he was mad at you. He would call you in his office and say, I heard this, listen to this. That was good. Do more of that. Or it was really good. It could have been great if you would have brought it here. But it wasn't, come on over to my office. You suck. You did this. I can't believe you. I don't ever do that again. So that was Ryan McGuire, and he taught me so much in terms of stretching conversations out in thought trees and being able to bring, having a topic and bringing 40 different things off of it. Don't get buried in that same thing in the repetitive. Branch off of it. Draw
right.
it out on a piece of paper.
Right.
And he's brilliant in that. And with Jim Gracie, he has taught me more than anything, and I've known him since back at the 1250 days. Be yourself. People want you. Deliver them that currency. You're a guy from Pittsburgh. You don't have to oversell it. You don't have to tell everybody that every 10 seconds. They know that. But you're the person who's on the other end of that speaker. That's you. You're the guy in that bread truck that's delivering that bread. You're the guy that's in that cubicle that's in the steel building. Like, that's you. Those are your buddies. You don't have to fake it at all. Just talk.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim has taught me that and brought that out of me more than anybody could. That just walk in and plan it and do it. And sometimes that simple approach is the best, you know. And Jim has been brilliant at helping me do that.
I want to talk to you about competition because we all like to, you know, test ourselves, be successful at what we do. When you look in the local market, you've got the Trib, you've got the Athletics here, right?
Yeah.
You've got DK Pittsburgh Sports. In radio, there is no other local sports morning show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that or wish that you had someone to match up with?
You know, I don't know. You get this stuff. You know, if you guys had a competitor, your ratings wouldn't be where they are. If you guys had a competitor, I would work the same. We do have a heritage rock station in 102.5 in DVE that gets enormous numbers and always will because they're great. Because Randy Bauman is super talented. Because
mm-hmm.
Bill Crawford's super talented. Because of what those guys do from that's what I listened to those guys too when I was growing up. Not those two guys, but I listened to Scott Paulson and Jim Crenn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they were just, they did Pittsburgh Bits. They did all this funny stuff. They're a different genre.
Right.
But they're my comedy. I laugh at them.
Yeah.
I think they're insanely brilliant. They don't make me work any harder or less hard. If it was just a sole sports station or a sole sports show, I don't know how it would change anything because I seem to think that part of what we do, a lot of the draw is the chemistry between Jim and I
mm-hmm.
and that he's the uncle everybody has. He's the guy that has so much knowledge, but he's the guy that sometimes trips over his own feet and there's comedic value in that. He's the guy that has talked to everybody and there's news value in that. And then there's the everyday regular guy value in me. So I think we'd be the same people. If there were five sports stations, or if we're just like ourselves.
You talked earlier about transitioning from print to radio.
Mm-hmm.
You see the way the print world has went. I mean, it's been deeply affected, right?
Because I left.
Of course. That's why. There's the solution. Talk to me about, like, you're a guy who does this for 20 hours a week on the air. What's the one thing that concerns you most about the radio industry and where it's going?
Not a whole lot in terms of terrestrial radio. You know, and Madden told me this. You know, like, people talk about satellite radio and this. And I still write columns for the website, and they get pretty good numbers, too. But people say all the time, you know, the terrestrial radio is going to go away. Well, so say it does. Then you know what will happen? Then however it's delivered, whether it's via satellite or whether it's via podcast or whatever, they're going to hire the best people, whatever, however the vehicle is, to give you that content. The platform is of little consequence, I think.
Right.
The people who put on the best shows are going to be put on to whatever platform it's delivered. And Mark was telling me this. He said, that's why I don't really worry all that much. If you put on the best show and if you deliver the best content, the platform is of ill consequence, even if the platform you're currently on goes away.
Right. If they told you 1 hour radio show, 1 hour podcast, 1 hour Facebook Live, 1 hour Twitter, you would do those 4 hours and you would say, look, we're selling 4 different 1 hour shows.
Correct. And that's the thing. You know, you get razzed by people who think they know everything. Radio's going away. Radio's, see, it's going to go to satellite radio. Okay. Well, guess what? If radio shuts down, then the people who aren't good at some of the other platforms, the good guys will take their jobs.
Right.
And I firmly believe that. And that's not, I'm not like patting myself on the back. I'm not saying I'd be one of those guys to take their jobs.
Right.
I'm just saying there will be a pecking order and the best guys will rise to the top. So that's why I put my time and effort into not worrying about the business. I worry about delivering the best content.
If you're a brand with good content, people will want it.
Right.
That's the bottom line. I want to ask you about how social media plays into your world, because, I mean, there's this thing about always being on, but you talked about some of the things you have to deal with outside of this place.
Yeah.
You're writing content. I mean, there's no way to be on all the time, but yet that's the world we're in where people want access to you.
I'll tell you what, I love it and I hate it. I love it because it gives you ideas. It gives you feedback. It gives you interaction with people who live 5 miles from here, who live 5,000 miles from here. And it makes them feel a part. You feel a family. Somebody texts. We have a text line every day. Somebody texts and says, oh, that was really funny. Or, hey, I have an idea. And heck, I'm not above using someone's idea. Or, why don't you ever talk about this? Or, hey, it's formed a communal spirit. The only thing is, what stinks is, number one, it's anonymous. And so the criticism you get,
right,
you can't help but read because you have to look at everything. You have to look at all the ones that say you suck to see the ones that are legitimate ideas. And from that aspect, I think that's terrible. And what it does, I think that that social media to people in our business, it can quietly beat them down and they don't have anybody to really go to, because it's just an accepted, you have to tweet, you have to go to our Facebook page, you have to go to our text line, you have to read the people telling you, I did this to your wife. Like, I've had people tweet, maybe your kid has cancer because she's retarded. You know, I've had people,
that is just,
I've had
brutal
people tweet that to me, you know, but you have to pour through. And what do you do? What are you going to do? Go fight them?
Right.
Because it's an anonymous Twitter account. Now, I look at that. The thing is, though, Jason, is you have to pour through that to get to all of them. People say, well, just block it. Well, I had to read it at least once to realize it.
Right.
And so I think that's the evil part of the social media. That stinks. Not everybody polices themselves. They don't have to. They can be a jerk. That can, no matter who, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Colin Coward. I don't care if you're somebody who's working in Dubuque or the middle of nowhere, Texas. That gets to you on some level, no matter what people say. It does. It has to. And that's the part that I wish people should just be nice to each other, but that's out the window. Like, that's not going to happen. We get arrows aimed at us and shot at us that a lot of people in other professions don't, because there's a voice to the voiceless that in the past never had that voice, and they come at us. And that's the trying part with social media. The good part with social media is people looking to be part of a community, or people just want to be part of a show,
right,
get to be able to be that far more than they ever were. They don't just have to be a caller.
I'm going to wrap up with a couple quick hits here in a moment. I want to hit you with one last question, because you just talked about, you know, the voice of the voiceless and people looking to get to you. And you look at it from a content standpoint these days on the air. You got social issues, anthem protests, political opinions. Everybody's got an opinion on everything, and I think social was actually contributed to this in a big way, because now it feels like the conversation's much larger than it was 15 years ago, because we didn't see all these opinions.
Right.
Now we see them. How do you guys go into approaching your show and touching those things when they come up? Do you look to stay away from them and keep the focus on sports, or do you allow them into the show from a content standpoint?
If it intersects with sports, it's a must. The anthem issue, it's a must you talk about it. You're derelict of duty if you don't.
Right.
Hey, look, I just want to watch a football game. Guess what? You can't. It's part of it. But you don't go out of your way if there's no intersection of sports just to do it. Because then you run the risk of polarizing half your audience or marginalizing half your audience. And just because you talk about a political issue doesn't mean you need to politicize it.
Right.
You could talk about a lot of political issues. I could talk about what Donald Trump tweeted without telling you if I voted for him, if I support him, if I think he's an evil guy or not. I can deliver that story and an opinion on it without letting you know what I feel in terms of my politics. I can talk about politics without telling you my politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think enough people do that. For the sake of just a political story, we don't talk about those. There's no reason to do that. It's a good way to throw a plug and kind of redirect people to our AM station.
Right.
But when it intersects with sports, you have to. There's no way you can't.
All right, we're going to wrap up on four quick hits. I'm going to throw one question by you, first thought that pops to your head on each of these, all right? One fact about Pittsburgh sports radio that industry folks might not be aware of is what?
That there's probably never been a better play-by-play guy alive on this earth than Mike Lang.
Wow, that's interesting.
Mike Lang is unbelievable. What he does to paint a picture is incredible. And because he does hockey and it's not football or baseball or basketball, this country, I don't think enough people know how good he is.
All right, second question. The celebrity you get called more, Chris Daughtry or Jason Statham?
You know what? I actually got Nick Bonino not too long ago.
Nice.
It was at Whole Foods. A guy asked me if I'm Nick Bonino, and I said, no, I'm not Nick Bonino. But not a whole lot of people. It's weird. I don't get recognized all that much, and I like it.
Listen, when you're a bald guy with a beard,
yeah,
you're comparing, you see Van Pelt with his stuff on TV. Best career advice you've ever been given?
Well, probably from Jeff Hathorn, who works here. Who's a jack of all trades. He said, say into that microphone what you feel is right and do the show the way that you feel is right.
And then the final question I'm going to hit you with, and no matter how you answer this, somebody won't like the answer. The best all-time sports radio host in the history of Pittsburgh sports radio is who?
It's a tie. It's probably between Doug Hirth and Mark Madden. Mark's brilliant. There's no two ways about it. He can be a competitor. He can be on the other side. But it's either Doug Hirth or Mark Madden.
Excellent. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you having me in studio.
Sure.
Continued success with the show, and more importantly, good luck to you and your family with what you're going through.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.